Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got Jason Stein with us from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, helping us all understand the state's pretty complicated biennial budget process a little better. Jason, one of the most frequently talked about little artifact of our budgeting process, infamous artifact, I may say, is what is called the Vanna White veto. And so for all of our listeners at home who haven't ever heard of this, can you explain what it is and how it was most recently used, much to the surprise of many folks?
Yeah, it was surprising, I think, and is surprising to people when they find out how much power the Wisconsin governor has with the veto pen. Formerly, you know, governors like Tommy Thompson actually had the ability to strike out individual letters and words and make new words that had not been there before. That power was eventually removed. But then governors retained the power to still strike out keywords, make, you know, new sentences, stitch two sentences together. You know, they could remove the not from thou shalt not kill to completely change the meaning of that sentence. And there was something called the Frankenstein veto that was, again, taking two sentences and making them into one. That was also shut down through a constitutional amendment. But then still, Tony Evers to this day retains, you know, among, if not the most powerful partial veto pen in the country. So he still, you know, really has a remarkable ability to change what the legislature sends him. But it's only for bills that have an appropriation in them.
Yes. And can you explain to people what's the difference between an appropriation and other budget terms that we hear? Do people really need to understand that? Or can we think in our head, it's an appropriation that's spending?
Correct. Essentially, you know, there's money that is set aside in a bill for a specific purpose, an appropriation, and that triggers his ability to have the partial veto pen. And the reason, the thinking to that was that it allows the chief executive of the state, the governor, to have some say with a budget bill about, you know, to lower spending. But, you know, it has also had the effect of giving governors of both parties this ability to set policy through their veto that is, I think, when you explain it to people, they generally are very surprised and shocked at the extent of it.
The breadth of the power of that partial veto. Right. It was most, or perhaps most recently, and perhaps most infamously used by the governor to try to increase educational spending for quite some time. Let's talk about educational spending in this current biennial budget proposal from the governor. We've heard Speaker Voss say in recent interviews that the last biennium saw a once in a generation increase in educational spending. Democrats have argued that that's, while there was an increase in spending, there really had been a slow sort of bleed in educational funding over a very long period. So it was trying to get right-size the funding level. Sure. Tell us what the core conflict is in this budget when it comes to educational funding, and who's right when it comes to this state's investment in public education viewed over the last, say, 15 to 20 years, of course, adjusted for inflation and increasing costs, as you will, Jason.
Yeah. So there's something called revenue limits that limit the amount of funding that school districts can take in from local property taxes and state general school aids on a per pupil basis. And those have been kept tighter than the rate of inflation in recent years, which inflation has been, you know, very rapid. And, you know, school districts have not fully caught up or kept up with that rate of inflation in recent years. And one thing you've had happen is, you know, the legislature in the past has really controlled how much school funding rose with those revenue limits. But increasingly, those are going up more rapidly than the legislature had expected or determined because of local referenda, and especially big ones. You had $250 million one pass in Milwaukee. You had $100 million one pass in Madison in 2024. And so I think, you know, one of the big questions is the legislature is sort of losing control of local school funding. And what's happening then is it's going on to local property taxes. And how are they going to react to that? The governor's reaction is to do a very, very large multi-billion dollar school state aid increase to districts. The legislature is clearly not going to sign on for most of that. What are they going to do in response? And that's kind of what we need to wait and see.
Is there some bit of objectively observable irony, Jason, in the Republicans' current view, and there'd been legislation introduced to strip away from local communities their right to increase school funding through referenda, while at the same time arguing for local control? It seems to be a bit in conflict. So that's question one. Question two is, do you have any prognostication? Would you like to go on the record, my friend, and give us where you think the funding might end up, and help us see that in context of what the needs are within the schools? It is somewhere in the middle ground. Is that going to be able to get it done, or are local districts still going to be experiencing a pinch?
Sure. First off, to your question, you know, there has been some legislation in recent cycles to at least pare back referendum opportunities for districts. I mean, I think by and large, though, those really haven't had much significant impact, I would say, on the ability of districts to go to referendum. You know, if the legislature were to do legislation that would really impact that, I don't think the governor would sign it. So in this session, I don't think you're going to see anything happen in that regard. Under the governor had this partial veto that you talked, that you alluded to in 2 years ago, that essentially set up for hundreds of years to come, in theory, a $325 per pupil increase in each, you know, every year in the revenue limit. That really puts some pressure, I think, on both sides to get a deal on education, and not just on that, but on the state budget overall, because if no budget passes, you get that $325 increase, which is maybe like, I don't know, 2.8%, something like that, increase in the average statewide revenue limit for school districts. And that, if there's no additional state aid approved, district school boards could choose to raise property taxes by that additional amount. And I think both the governor and legislature would be reluctant to have that happen. Yes. So maybe that puts a little more pressure on them, both sides, to get a budget and not just have no budget at all. You know, I think it's like, I think the most likely scenario is that school districts are continue to be, feel like they have not gotten enough in the state budget, because I mean, you know, they've been pretty unhappy with where things have been at. And, you know, but so you're probably going to see more referenda, which we'll report on the April referenda when those come, when we get those results.
Yes.
And also I think, you know, some unhappy property taxpayers, because you are seeing upward pressure on property taxes because of all this. So we'll see, but that's, I think, probably where the safest money would be for now.
Appreciate that. Again, folks, if you're just joining us, I've got Jason Stein of the beloved Wisconsin Policy Forum with us to delve deep into the state's biennial budget process, which is getting underway. I want to turn to, in just a minute, the trickle-down impacts, an actual trickle-down impact of the federal spending cuts, and where Wisconsinites might see and feel those. Are they making adjustments in the state budget for that? But I wanted to ask you first this question. How common is a biennial budget for state governments? We get it done for 2 years, but I, and this is genuinely, Jason, I have no idea what the answer is, because I'm not super familiar with other state budget processes.
That's a great question. It's been a while since I've looked at it. There are definitely many states that also do a two-year process. There are some that do an annual process. Wisconsin used to do an annual budget. Yep. I think it was in the 60s that we went to a two-year budget. And because it, you know, it's a time-consuming process. It goes from like February to July. Yes. So then to be doing that every year, it's a pretty heavy lift. So that's why we went to the two-year process.
Yeah, but I like biennial budgets. Having worked in a local government, there's so much effort and energy that is sucked into those budget processes that, you know, the biennial seems to make good sense. So actual trickle-down impacts of the federal spending cuts. Are we seeing adjustments in the state budget for those? What can Wisconsin residents expect?
I think we're still in the zone of not really knowing what's happening. I mean, you know, and litigation and back and forth. Yes. And there's so many cases and they're somewhat contradictory. Although the results, I have not seen many, if any, results that are suggesting that the administration has broad powers to avoid making expenditures that are essentially appropriated within the federal budget and within federal law. But that being said, there certainly could be a whole variety of impacts to, you know, the state, either because of funding delays or funding cuts that might eventually be approved by Congress. And all this research is available on our website for free if people want to look it out at wispolicyforum.org. But we do have a chart in our budget brief on the state that looks at what the exposure is or what is the level of federal funding by agency. And it's really in the Department of Health Services that you have the big systemic risk for the state. This health services budget is, you know, roughly $40 million. And of that, about $25 billion is Medicaid and food share, which is a successor to food stamp funding and some other programs. So it's really in Medicaid. I mean, the next biggest agency at the UW system is under $4 billion. So, you know, it's almost like an order of magnitude. Or, you know, if you want to think about it, the Department of Health Services has more than really all the other state agencies put together, is another way to think about it. So that's really the thing to watch, is Medicaid health coverage for the needy, as well as to a much lesser extent, food share funding.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary when you just think of the sheer size of those budget numbers compared to the other line items and departmental spending at the feds. I wanted to cue in on this, and you'll have just about a minute or so, Jason. And that is, how about the uncertainty? Are there any discussions that you've heard of? Are there any mechanisms within state law if funding is, say, in litigation, if there's just uncertainty, if it doesn't get released, do we have other ways to supplement, for example, those funding sources if the money is not forthcoming from the feds?
Well, we do have, you know, this very large general fund balance, which I think retaining some of that could be helpful because it can float us for these things. And a lot of federal funding works that way anyway. It works on a reimbursement basis, as you know, from your time in county government. So I think that's one reason why, you know, the state should really think about retaining some reserves that it can use for that purpose. But in some cases, they may not have under state law the ability to do that. And that's still something we're trying to, you know, get a better handle on.
Jason, it's one of those things. This is all hearkening back to like 2020 times. Like, this has never happened before. Everybody's looking around. What do we do now? Gee whiz, unprecedented is now a very precedented word. Thanks so much to Jason Stein from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. You can find out more at wispolicyforum.org. We're going to take care of our last bit of business this afternoon. I'm going to be right back with you about the silencing of the voice of America. Those thoughts coming up next right here on the Lead On Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.